Hi, everyone. Welcome to our Big Unlock podcast. My name is Ritu M. Oberoi. I'm the managing partner here at Big Rio and Demo and a co-host of the Big Unlock podcast. Very warm welcome to all our listeners to season 7. And today we are very thrilled to have with us Andrew Porter. He serves as a key leader at Vane General Hospital, where he's driving forward initiatives focused on operational excellence, patient-centered care, and sustainable growth for a community-based health system. Andrew has been instrumental in advancing strategic priorities that strengthen access, improve outcomes, and enhance workforce resilience. So looking forward to having a very in-depth and engaging chat with Andrew. Warm welcome to Andrew. Thank you.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah. Would you like to add anything else to that introduction, or should we get started?
Well, I'm on y'all's time. I'd just like to say, you know, it's a privilege and an honor to get to chat with you all today. And for your listeners to get to know us here at Wayne General Hospital a little bit better, and just excited of what we get to talk about today.
Great. So, you know, we usually like to start with an origin story, just to, you know, ask our guests how they got into healthcare and how particularly at this intersection of healthcare and, you know, administration and tech. So if you can tell us a little bit about your background and how you came to this role, we would love to hear that. Thank you.
Of course. It's kind of a winding path of how I ended up here. So I will give you all the short elevator spiel version. I started working here at Wayne General actually when I was still in high school. It was my first job was here working as an ER tech, and did that, like I said, during high school into college. Found myself going the clinical route to start with in my education, a PA by trade, practiced emergency medicine, continued to do that to an extent even now. Did some teaching, some education along the way. Got my doctorate degree in medical sciences with a focus on healthcare administration. And the opportunity came along to come back to my hometown to practice emergency medicine. I was able to bring that that education and skill set of administrative leadership, and kind of, you know, the rest is history. I saw an opportunity. My board of trustees put faith in me to be the CEO here at the hospital, and here we are today.
Great. Thank you for sharing that with us, Andrew. I think, that was one of the questions I had, actually, that you have this professional triad of, you know, clinical administrative experience and a strong commitment to, you know, academics. So which part of it is your personal favorite and which part of it do you enjoy the most?
I actually had an accounting professor one time, and I think he was kind of chastising me for getting a little too overloaded in my life, too many projects at that time. But he explained it beautifully. I mean, it's kind of think of, as a bar stool, you know, three-legged stool. You've got, so professionally, I have a clinical component, an academic component, and then the administrative component. And I think for me personally, each one of those legs of the bar stool makes the other stronger, is how I look at it. So work is continuing to work on the kind of the front lines, if you will, in healthcare. I have a much better sense of what are the needs of the community, you know, what's the pulse of my staff. There's so many times that I'm able, something that could turn into a significant perhaps cultural problem for the organization, a logistical issue, by being on the front lines, so to speak, in the emergency department, interacting with staff on that level, it helps me, you know, have a lot better sense of what are the needs, what are the challenges, where is our opportunity at. And then you look at it, I continue to do a little bit of adjunct teaching. And so that kind of keeps me sharp of what's the research showing we're going to be in 5-10 years, what are the best practices? So kind of having to put that really academic hat on all leads to me being a better administrator. So I kind of know some of the practical challenges, but I have that academic experience that comes to the table. So I try to take all of that to really drive our system in what are the best practices and how do we, in the rural environment, all today's financial challenges, how do we take that into consideration and really have a strong strategic plan, but also remain nimble at the same time, because the healthcare world today is essentially completely different what it was a year ago. Again, for me personally, it has made sense to kind of have different facets of clinical, academic, and administrative. And I think each one kind of helps me be better in my other roles.
Yeah, I like that analogy because it really helps me visualize, you know, exactly what you're saying and how you have to keep all three things in balance. And actually, one makes the other stronger, just like you said. So thank you for sharing that with us. And Andrew, I wanted to hear more about, you know, Wayne General, because you operate in this challenging environment where it's a community hospital. What specific operational or financial levers have had the biggest impact in, you know, maintaining both quality and sustainability? Because that's what we've been hearing from other health systems, C-suite leaders who've come on, that, you know, it's always crunch, resource crunch, and you're always having to make do with, you know, less and less. So you, I know you're using AI and other things to improve like the operational aspects of it. But other than that, what's top of mind? And, you know, how do you kind of see yourself facing those challenges?
Yeah, so a little bit more detail about us as an organization. So we are the sole community hospital for our area, serve a population in excess of 50,000 people, just given our rural geographical area and how far out our reach goes. We're county owned, so that's a little bit of, you know, for some of the listeners may or may not be, you know, something unique. So we're actually a political subdivision of Wayne County, meaning that even though we don't get any taxpayer funding from the taxpayers of Wayne County, we have for many, many years have been kind of financially sustainable. But at the end of the day, the reality is, and something that I feel like we really try to embrace when we care for our patients, is that, you know, we're the people's hospital. We are owned by the people of Wayne County. That's important. We have the nonprofit designation. So we're kind of, you know, I describe it to people, 365 days out of the year, you know, our goal is high quality patient care. We're not in it, you know, we're not a for profit organization that we're having to answer to shareholders. We have to answer to the people. But the reality is, to meet those needs, you have to have money. So at the end of the day, it's still a business. It's a unique business model, but you still have to get cash into the door. And I think for small hospitals like us, there's just been so much transition over the past, really COVID, post-COVID for us, and I know a lot of other organizations, we went through an EHR transition during that kind of towards the end of COVID. We transitioned electronic health records. And that's always a very big undertaking for a smaller health system like ours. So kind of navigating how that all intertwines into the revenue cycle has been a big challenge for us. I think for a small community hospital leader, it's really the name of the game right now is trying to be conservative in our finances and valuing our independence and just keeping that financial aspect right up there with patient care, because to offer that high level of patient care, we have to be in a good financial situation.
Absolutely. So just to take that a little further, so do you think that investing in AI and automation, like where do you see these, you know, most practical near-term opportunities for these technologies? How far along are you on that journey? And are you guys doing anything with AI? Like recently, all we hear about is like ambient, or we hear, you know, voice agents, or these are some of the frontline technologies we've heard in terms of the digital front door, because people are still not embracing it, you know, clinically or for diagnostics, but for the patient journey or for the digital front door, we hear a lot about these. So where is Wayne General with those technologies?
I would say probably about a year ago, I'd very distinctly remember the days, and we're having conversations that are essentially of the nature, we don't want to get left behind again. So we really took a cognizant look at where are our pain points. We're not going to go out there and try to fix problems with AI that don't exist. Let's look at the issues that we're having, and maybe not AI could help be a part of that solution. And a good example is with, you mentioned like the ambient listening, some of the, you know, AI assistance with documentation. And that was one of our, the first kind of areas that, that we went down that, that pathway. And it's been very positive for us. We've had it active in a substantial manner for about going on 2 months. So still a little early to have a complete picture of the financial implications as far as, you know, improved documentation. I will tell you the timeliness of documentation has absolutely improved. But for me, the biggest factor with that is provider satisfaction. Absolutely. You know, even some of, I'll describe it as some of our later career providers are resistant to technology sometimes, have tremendously embraced that use of AI in assisting with documentation. So that has added, I would argue, some longevity to certain providers. And in turn, I don't have any way just yet to quantify this, I would argue it's improving the patient's experience, because instead of the provider sitting there typing on a keyboard, feeling rushed, like I've got to get back to my computer and do all this documentation, now it becomes a lot more what medicine was intended to be. And that's an intimate conversational interaction between the patient's, you know, physician or other provider and what the needs they have of that day. So that is that AI assisted documentation tools is what comes to mind first that we have implemented and are at least initially seeing really positive results from.
Yeah, I think I was having a conversation, you know, a few months ago with one of the C-suite guests, and they mentioned that one very important benefit of ambient has been that, you know, the doctors are vocalizing more, and that's great for patients because they love to hear more, you know. So because of ambient, because it's taking all the notes in the background, they're actually saying these things aloud, and that's also really helping.
That's a great point, and I'll put my clinician hat on. It's so easy to see a patient and say, well, you know, I think you have pneumonia or whatever. We're going to run a couple of tests. We're going to get an x-ray of your chest, and then you move on. Whereas with this, you're kind of, you are encouraged to be more detailed in that conversation because you know that it's going to get populated into that note. Exactly. Then the conversation becomes, here's my concerns of what we may be dealing with. I'm going to get X, Y, and Z test. Here's what I'm looking for. This is the initial treatment plan. And then, like how I have my AI-assisted documenting tool set up, is that every time I go in the room, it timestamps it. That's an additional encouragement to make sure that every 30 minutes, every hour, whatever that's appropriate, that I'm going reassessing my patient, I'm providing updates to them. So I think that it, while might not have been the intent, it also increases some accountability of making sure that you're having these, you know, detailed, appropriate conversations with the patient, and that you're checking up on them, you're keeping the patient and their family updated. So for me personally, that's been some of the really positives.
Great, great. So going along the same lines, Andrew, you mentioned, you know, some of these physicians were like, you know, older, like an older population of physicians. So let's talk about change fatigue or, you know, the barriers for this digital transformation and how you kind of talk to them to kind of overcome that. Because as we all know, sometimes people can be very resistant to technology, like you mentioned. So how did you kind of break down those barriers and how did you get everybody on board? Like, let's do this. Let's, you know, let's implement AI and see where we're going with this.
Yeah. So for us, we actually had one of our kind of, you know, more experienced clinicians had heard that this technology was becoming available. So we let him kind of do a little research, look at different vendors, participate in that selection process. And then we actually let him be the first user, use it for a couple of months. And then he really became the champion for us. So the sale was easy after that because other people, this guy, he hates technology. He wishes we could do everything on paper. And so when he starts expressing to colleagues, this is as close to charting on paper as we're probably ever going to come again. It's decreased my workload. I'm not stay in hours after shift or coming in on hours off. So I would say for other organizations, finding that champion of the project early on and giving them some buy-in to the project was really key for us.
Yeah, that's a great point. So basically have the change driver be somebody who has like a stake in the change and who's able to influence others around them.
And kind of realizing that that leader, that agent of change, it may not be the first person that comes to your mind. So really kind of analyzing, it doesn't need to probably be the new graduate clinician. It probably needs to be someone for multiple reasons, one of which their your more senior medical staff are going to have those longstanding relationships with their colleagues. That trust is going to be on a different level.
Okay, so looking ahead, Andrew, what do you believe will, you know, differentiate these community hospitals that thrive from the ones that, you know, struggle to survive, like you said, because, you know, resources are always going to be scarce. So what do you think are, you know, some of those key factors that are going to let Vane General in particular and, you know, community hospitals in general be on that survival path?
Well, you know, we have a saying in medicine, you oftentimes don't want to be the first to do something and you don't want to be the last. And so I think for us, that meant while we may not be the very first to try something, we do want to be on the cutting edge. And if we see a product or a solution that has worked for others and it makes sense for us to consider going down that pathway. And then also the AI vendor market has opened up so many opportunities for relationships, for solutions. One thing that we have been blessed is our relationship with Echo Health that make the Echo stethoscope. So we've partnered with them, some various research projects with their Sensora AI tool, our heart murmur detection. And that's been a great relationship. So that kind of gets into the space of, you know, how do we increase the access of care by using AI? How do we bring that really amazing level of technology and sophistication to a population that historically would have been years behind, say, what could be offered in a large metropolitan area? And we're pretty passionate about that cutting level edge of care when it is done in a way that makes financial sense and that we had the capabilities to do. So we're super proud of that relationship. Look forward to some of the research that's going to come out of that partnership.
Great. So, Andrew, as you've explored AI on your own and, you know, like you said, you're interested in learning more and you're always doing research, what do you feel are, you know, some of your personal favorite areas that you would like to know more about? And where do you think, like, the biggest change in healthcare is headed in the next, you know, year or so? Like a crystal ball.
I'll put my administrator hat on. Something is going to I would argue, have to change in the revenue cycle space, coding, billing. There's got to be some relief at some point for our hospitals because the current model of how complex, I mean, I'm going to be very honest, I by no means understand the revenue cycle completely, and much less a layperson being able to understand how complex that is and just the timing of how long it takes from when a patient is seen to the facility receiving payment for those services. I mean, oftentimes you're looking at 30, 60 days at least. So for me, I really hope that healthcare systems and the payers can come together and find solutions with AI. Coding, billing in that arena would be huge, really huge for everyone. So while may not be the crystal ball outlook with a definitive endpoint, that's more of Andrew's hope of what will happen. Yeah.
I think that's a tough one because it involves so many players and, you know, everything's so fragmented right now. So to bring something that can talk across and like build like a system that goes across. That's what we've been hearing from everybody, that that's really what the barrier is because everything is so siloed. And unless there's like some protocols that let you talk to each other, maybe with agents, I don't know, maybe you can have like agents from each component talk to each other and kind of speed up the process. That's what we've been hearing. So
absolutely, that would be incredible.
Maybe that's the future. Well, it's been a great conversation. Thank you so much for joining us on the Big Unlock podcast. You know, it's been a pleasure having you as our guest. Thank you so much, Andrew.
Thank you. It's been an honor.